Lots of organizations run programs to help people in need. Few of them feature logos of burly guys swinging axes at firewood. When you see that logo, you're talking about the Jackson County Fuel Committee. It is about helping people in need with an additional focus on not just wood in the stove, but trees in the woods as well. Let's learn more about the Jackson County Fuel Committee. Bill Jeanette is with us from the committee in the studio here. Bill, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning, Jeff. Thank you very much for having me.
And what's your position with the committee?
I'm the operations manager. I'm a full-time volunteer with JCFC, and it's an all-volunteer organization. It's built completely through community support and participation. We don't take any government funding, so everybody's a volunteer.
And tell us about the genesis of the Fuel Committee. It seems like a fairly broad mission.
Yeah, well, it grew out of the poverty needs of people, especially seasonal workers here in Jackson County. The first efforts to provide fuel, firewood for people were undertaken by volunteers with Northwest Seasonal Workers Association, who were canvassing to build a membership of low-income workers. And in Ashland, they were going door-to-door and ran across an elderly couple that was freezing in the midst of the winter. And so one of the volunteers, whose husband was a carpenter, went to his work site and got some scrap wood and built a fire in the hearth for this elderly couple. And that's really what sparked the Fuel Committee. So it grew first as a benefit, and there were so many people who were interested in going out and cutting wood and delivering it and heating their homes with it, that after about a year or so, we constitute ourselves, and we've been going for 36 years as an all-volunteer effort here in Jackson County.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
With a lot of changes going on in our use of wood for heating and use of wood for just about everything in the Rogue Valley generally.
It's true, and we really see wood as a fuel of the future, because firewood is something that's produced locally. It's renewable. It's sustainable. And with the technology we have these days, it's virtually pollution-free except for carbon dioxide. For, you know, we primarily provide it to low-income households who can't afford any other way to heat their homes. They can't afford the rising rates of utility bills. And for those families, it saves them $100 to $200 a month during the cold weather season. But it also helps save the environment because it's displacing the use of fossil fuels. About 80% of the electricity that Pacific Power sells here in Southern Oregon comes from coal mines and fracking fields in the Midwest. So if we can use this local resource, then we're repressing the use of the fossil fuels and really helping to make a substantial contribution in the battle against climate change as a result.
There's an interesting observation on the website for the Jackson County Fuel Committee about the line of thought at the beginning of the Fuel Committee 36 years ago, which was, and it's a compelling one, that, you know, here are people who are not able to heat their homes because they can't afford firewood, and yet we're surrounded by wood.
Yeah, we are trying to address and resolve this disparity between the abundance of fuel resources that exist in Southern Oregon. We are truly a very rich community here, and yet so much of our work is seasonal. It's part-time. It's temporary. The poverty rate's very high here, and so there's a lack of access to fuel resources for people. And our attempt to deal with that is through involving the whole community. First and foremost, the people who are facing the problem themselves, who know better than anybody what needs to be done. They need fuel. And so many of the people who come to us requesting assistance will turn around. If they've got a truck, they'll do a delivery to somebody else's home who doesn't have transportation before they take fuel home for themselves, or they'll spend a Saturday morning chopping wood or going up into the forest with us. And it helps not only the people who are in need, but it really helps the environment, because our forests in this region and really all over North America are extremely stressed. They're very overcrowded because of 150 years of mismanagement. We
generally fire suppression.
First the clear cutting, and then the fire suppression. And these forests around here used to have a pretty stable population of maybe 25 to 100 trees per acre, but because of fire suppression, we've got hundreds, and in some cases more than 1,000 trees per acre, plus a huge buildup of the understory. And these ladder fuels, as they're called, when a forest isn't properly managed, are what give rise to these catastrophic fires, because a fire catches, whether lightning strikes or man-made, and grows through the ladder fuels into the canopy. And that's why we've had these enormous fires that we're seeing all over the continent that are just wreaking havoc with our ecosystems. So the active intervention that JCFC and its partners in the resiliency projects that are being undertaken here locally is kind of performing emergency surgery on these overgrown forests, trying to restore that natural balance where the trees that live in the forest are not stressed out with intense competition, but are thinned out to the point where they have sufficient access to water and nutrients in the soil and sufficient sunlight where they can really grow into or back into an old growth habitat.
Bill Jeanette is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the operations manager at JCFC, the Jackson County Fuel Committee. Questions and comments, welcome. 800-838-3760 around the listening area. 800-838-3760, email address jx@jeffnet.org. The operative word here is fuel. Is there any fuel you'll deal with other than wood?
Yeah, most people do not use firewood, and yet everybody needs light and heat. We often say that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all women and men are created equal, and we're all endowed with certain inalienable rights, and among these are light and heat and shelter for the elements. So we are constantly battling on the ground level, so to speak, to prevent power companies from shutting people's utilities off. Twice a week, we have utility advocacy sessions where volunteers learn how to sit down with somebody who is facing a situation where they can't pay their bill. Often people come in with an imminent shutoff notice, and these are typically people who are elderly and disabled on a fixed income, or young families, often single parents trying to raise one or two kids on one or two jobs. And the income level has stayed pretty flat in Southern Oregon over the last 10, 12 years, whereas utility rates have been raised by the State Public Utilities Commission over 60% during that same period of time.
Well, permitted by the Public Utilities Commission. I mean, requested by the utilities, right?
The utilities will try and get as much as they possibly can, of course, and the state is the one who regulates the rates. So as well as doing advocacy, contacting the power companies if somebody comes to us facing a shutoff, and then taking that problem to the community, contacting various agencies, churches, and individuals who are willing to help out, we take our case before the Public Utilities Commission. And for the first time this year, we've got them to consider some serious policy changes. They commissioned a report on low-income issues where now the Public Utilities Commission is weighing the idea of installing a moratorium in Oregon that would ban power companies from shutting off the most vulnerable and poorest people during the harshest months, as well as during times of extreme heat. So we're engaged in those discussions with the Public Utilities Commission and really hope to bring about fundamental changes in utility policy so that those policies are directed towards meeting the needs of especially the most vulnerable citizens. You know, that means reining in some of the mega profits that these power companies are making. They are the leaders on Wall Street, and they're doing fine. They have a monopoly, and we have to have a voice of the people represented.
So, Bill, about how many people does the Jackson County Fuel Committee serve in a given year, and of that, what percentage are the utility bill people, and what percentage are the people who are getting fuel for wood stoves and fireplaces?
Well, during the last 2 years, we fought 333 utility cases, and I'd say about 75% of those were Pacific Power customers. The balance of them were City of Ashland and Avista customers. So that represents, you know, thousands of people who have come to us with in danger of having their utilities shut off. The power companies shut off 71,000 households last year in Oregon. And again, that represents hundreds of thousands of people. So our efforts to bring about policy changes at the state level have a very broad impact. As far as the firewood benefit, we have, during the cold weather, we get out about 100 truckloads a month. And each of those truckloads represents perhaps half a cord or a little bit more. So it's about $10,000 worth of firewood that's distributed absolutely free of charge during the cold weather season. We try and keep people involved year-round. We've got a woodcut going out today in Tolman Creek. And if we can get firewood to people during the off-season, then they're better prepared, and so are we, to deal with the cold weather when it does hit.
Grab these headphones. We have a phone call for you. We have Grumpy John and Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Bill Jeanette from the Jackson County Fuel Committee.
Thanks. This might be beyond his scope, but looking out at the forest from our little grassy knoll up here outside Grants Pass, I see an awful lot of orange from fir trees that just you can see a speck of orange, and then 2 weeks later, that whole entire tree is orange, dried out, and dead. Can he comment on the climate or whatever else might be causing fir trees to start croaking.
Let's find out. Thank you, Grumpy John.
Yeah, we have what's happened as the forests have become more stressed out because of overcrowding, drought, and hotter temperatures. The trees become much more susceptible to attack by insects. We have fir borers that are hitting the dug firs. And in this region, our biggest problem is the bark beetle, which is there's an onslaught against our ponderosa pines. And we're seeing stands that are succumbing to the kind of situation that you're talking about all over the place. So the resiliency projects that I mentioned earlier are an attempt to actively suppress these bark beetles. We have a crew going up to the Candy Mountain Resiliency Project, which is on private land in the Tolman Creek watershed today. I was just up there on Saturday, and our volunteers have felled a couple of large ponderosas that are infested with these bark beetles. When the trees are healthy, when they've got enough water, sun, and nutrients, they put out sap as a way to keep the beetles from boring into them. But when they're stressed out, the beetles can get in there, lay their eggs, and they rapidly kill the trees. And then the larvae hatch, and they can fly to nearby trees. So our goal in these resiliency projects, as far as defending against the bark beetle, is to remove at least 75% of the infected trees. Because if we can do that, it prevents the bark beetle from being able to spread through the forest. But this is a massive problem all over the continent, these beetles have destroyed enough trees in the Rocky Mountains in the last 10 years to cover the entire state of Washington. So there are both public and private resiliency projects. And
so this is not, I was going to get into that because the Ashland Forest Resiliency Project has been on the program several times. This is a private one, though?
Yeah, this is through Dr. Bill and Sarah Epstein own 420 acres up in Tolman Creek. And we've been working on Bill and Sarah's land since 1988. And the resiliency projects that Chris Chambers, the fire chief, talked about on your station recently are an attempt to, again, restore the habitat. And taking out the infested trees is one of the most important aspects of that. And so there's various projects that are happening now all over the country. But here in the Rogue Valley is really where it all began, so to speak. I mean, back in the early 80s, people did not know what we do now about forest ecology and what's needed to put the balance back in place. But this kind of active intervention of taking out the weed trees, taking out the diseased trees, is an essential part of where we get our wood and how we get our wood and the other benefits that accrue to the environment as a whole through projects like this.
Are there any efforts to make sure that the wood stoves, that the wood burning appliances are up to date, up to emission standards, given how the Rogue Valley tends to collect smoke in the winter?
Yeah, we work with a couple of our supporters. Home Comfort and Orley's Stove and Spa have the latest in wood stove technology. And the new stoves, of course, are much more efficient. They basically have a burn-off process that gets rid of all the particulate pollution. One of the issues that we've confronted the Public Utilities Commission with and also had discussions here locally about is that the weatherization programs and subsidies that the government has really don't benefit the people who need the help most. People who are using old wood stoves tend to be low-income people who could certainly benefit from upgrading. But a lot more of the attention of how we provide for the infrastructure to utilize this wood has got to come from the government paying attention to the fact that people need these things. They need help getting the new kind of stoves that can eliminate the pollution that's a concern.
So if people want to give you some assistance at the Jackson County Fuel Committee, what can they do and where can they go to deliver that assistance, whether it's their sweat or their dollars?
Well, thanks, Jeff. That's really the overarching theme for people who are concerned about climate change and being able to do something that's effective locally, for people who are concerned about poverty. All of this takes workers to get out there and get those trees out of the forest. We could use literally hundreds of people every month. We got crews going out every Wednesday and Saturday and often other days too. And even when we have a crew of 30 or 40 people, we can use quite a few more. No experience is necessary, but people can give us a call, come down to our office, join one of the crews. You can work with experienced people. It's a lot of fun. It's a great workout. You're helping to heal the environment, and you're helping to meet some of the most essential day-to-day needs of people. Likewise, with the utility advocacy, we provide on-the-job training, and it's one of the most important things that a person can do is to reach out to somebody who's got a problem that they can't solve alone and make it your problem. And we solve these problems by making it the community's problem. And those are the skills that we teach.
What's the best way to contact the Fuel Committee?
Best way is to give us a call. We're at 541-488-2905. That's 488-2905. And our office is right across from Southern Oregon University at 995 Siskiyou Boulevard. Our doors are open 7 days a week. And our phones are answered by real people who love to talk to you. If you need help or you'd like to help, we need people and supplies and just about everything you can imagine.
Thanks for coming across the street to talk to us. Bill Jeanette is the operations manager of the Jackson County Fuel Committee. Thanks, Bill.